We talked about what we like and all of the strengths. Now let's talk about the weaknesses and vulnerabilities of the Jaguars. We'll do it in just a second on this episode of Locked On Jaguars.
You are Locked On Jaguars, your daily Jacksonville Jaguars podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What up, good people? Thank you for another edition of Locked On Jaguars. I am the Locked On Jaguars podcast daily show host, Tony Wiggins. We thank you for making us your first listen because it's your team every day here on Locked On Jaguars. Make sure you tap in and subscribe for free to our YouTube page, Locked On Jaguars, that is. Hit that bell and that like button, too. Make sure you hit the bell so you get all the notifications of whenever we drop a show. And wherever you get your audio podcast, make sure you tap in there, too, to ensure that you don't miss a daily episode. Recording a little bit late today. My bad, got a lot of stuff going on, but we wanted to make sure we gave you the time and attention that you deserve because you're everydayers and you know the quality, and what we like to do here is give you the best. New people, new listeners, fans from all over the place, make sure you tap in if you enjoyed the show. Follow me on Twitter at Shop Talking Wig. Make sure you tap in so you don't miss anything. So what we're going to talk about today is likes and dislikes, right? We've talked about all of those things we've liked about the Jaguars. Sunshine and rainbows, and we talked as if we're having a big pajama party and we're cooking marshmallows and s'mores and all of this stuff. Well, you have to look at another side too. You don't want to be Debbie Downer, but you do want to be honest about yourself. So I'm going to preface this by saying this. Last year, I felt like the way the team was constructed, that it was in their best interest to play from ahead. Like, I know you're thinking like, well, whoopee-doo, Wig. Everyone thinks that you should always score quickly, score early, and get ahead in games. For the Jaguars, I thought it was particularly important because I didn't think that they had the firepower to come from behind, right? I thought if they're too far behind late in games, that it would nullify the run-pass balance and would make them too one-dimensional. I also thought that the best way for them to play was from ahead because it gave their defense a chance to run their stunts and their twists, and it took away the ability of other teams to just think that they had all day to stay with their balance and to run the ball. I was wrong about most of that stuff. And I still believe in the theory, but then you have to play the games. And we always use these two words, demonstrated performance, right? And the demonstrated performance showed me I was wrong in thinking that their best chance to win and their clear chance to win was to be ahead or either be in a close game where they could do something late schematically and win it. Because the Jaguars literally got up behind in all of their games late, including the epic game where they were down late in the playoffs, and they won it. And they kept coming back. They did it to Baltimore. They did it to the Raiders. They did it to the Cowboys. And then when you saw in the playoffs, they did it to the Chargers. So my entire theory about this team went out the window. It's because we even started calling them the comeback cats, right? So I said that to say this, we are not always right. And I'm glad I wasn't right because the Jaguars last year down the stretch gave the fan base here some of the best football that they have seen, right? But we're going to take another stab at it. And I'm going to organically come here, I'm getting on a witness stand and tell you exactly what I believe the team's weakness is on both sides of the ball. The thing that I'm most concerned with, and they haven't played a game yet. They haven't practiced. We haven't seen the development aspect. We haven't seen who's coming into camp. We've seen what they look, but we haven't seen anything that tells us that we can come up with this theory. So it's basically based on this. It's based on what I feel the makeup of the team is and the personnel. I'll never doubt the Jaguars again, because they've shown me that they can come back from anything. The 27-0 deficit to the Chargers late in the second quarter and for them to win that game, that really, for me personally, it made me think as long as Trevor Lawrence is the quarterback and as long as Doug Peterson is the coach, that these guys are going to be able to come back and be able to do whatever. And now that they've added the big playability of Calvin Ridley, and then when you look on the defensive side of the ball, they really had a knack for creating things to happen and doing things late in games. For instance, they couldn't give up a touchdown to the Chargers in the second half because if they did, the margin would have been too big to overcome. They gave up two field goals and scored on every possession. So that's a testament to Doug, and it's a testament to the coaching staff, and it's a testament to Trevor. It's also a testament to those guys to believe. And you got to accept and believe in that stuff and accept good leadership and understand that and have a never quit attitude. So all of the players, everyone had a lot to do with it. Jamal Agnew had a lot to do with it on special teams. All of those things are true. All right. So before I get into the nuts and bolts, I'm going to tell you right now, in segment two, I'm going to start with the defensive Achilles heel. And then in segment three, I'm going to tell you what the offensive Achilles heel could be and then how those two things work together. All right. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to get to segment two and segment three quickly today. And in just a second, I'm going to tell you the things that concern me most. Now, this is not something for y'all to get alarmed about. But look, every team has their little quirks. Every team has their things from a personnel aspect that they have to overcome. I'll get all of that down, and I'll tell you all of that stuff in just a second here on Locked On Jaguars after I let you know about today's sponsor. Today's sponsor for today's show is FanDuel. Man, you need to make a fast break to FanDuel during the NBA playoffs. Because right now, new customers can get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's $1,000 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Can the Boston Celtics really do it? They have their second shot tonight to come back from down 3-0. They're down 3-1 right now. Can they pull off a miracle? Well, we'll just have to see. Because there's no better place to bet all of the playoff action than America's number one sports book. Visit fanduel.com/lockedon and get a no sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's fanduel.com/lockedon. FanDuel, official sports betting partner of the NBA. And we thank you for joining us here on Locked On Jaguars, where it's your team every day. And we thank you for making us your first listen. Now, as I gave you this overall overview of what we're going to talk about here, and we didn't really get into it in the first segment. I had to do some mansplaining, right? One of the things that I can tell you is that every team has its little weaknesses or areas where you can attack them. There's like no perfect team, right? There have been some throughout history that you felt like did not have weaknesses, but everyone, it's almost like you know your kids. You know your kids. You don't like nobody else to tell you, but you know the things that your child is not good at, right? Everybody, I know the things that my kids weren't good at, and they, as they got older, they actually had to work on those things, and they're better. But I know the things that I'm not good at. I ain't gonna tell you, because I want y'all to believe that I'm good at everything. But when you take inventory, when you have to play this sport and coach this sport, I assume that what these guys have to do is they almost have to mask things, and sometimes you don't. They don't do it by, for instance, coaches don't always say don't fumble. They'll say protect the ball. So I think coaches also build their teams to the point where if we do all of these things right, nobody won't exploit this thing, that thing. And you hope that none of those things pop up on tape. Because if they pop up on tape, you can best believe that every single opponent that you play for the rest of the year is going to do it, right? But I will go off just off personnel and we'll start off on defense. So I'm not going to use bad teams that the Jaguars will play. Now, any game can be won or lost, but I am going to reasonably talk about, since we have now changed the conversation from the Jaguars being relevant to seeing how far they can go, right? They were one of the top four teams in the AFC last year, the side that won the Super Bowl. And I think in the NFC, they would have been in the top three at the very minimum. So you think the Jaguars are one of the seven or eight teams that are expected to make some noise this year if you look at it from a year-to-year basis. In my opinion, if I'm one of those teams, playoff level team, when I look at the chalkboard I circle one person's name. Darius Williams. That's who I circle. And then I look over and I say, okay, what if we go to three wide? What do they do at nickel? And whoever that is, if it's Trey Herndon or whoever, Chris Claybrooks, whoever, I circle his name too, right? And I say, that's where we're going to go. We'll keep him honest and we'll go over here and bother with Tyson Campbell every now and then. But for the most part, we're working right over here on his right-hand side, and we're going to go attack these guys and we're going to make them play. Now, Darius Williams isn't foreign to that concept because 2 years ago he played with the Rams, right? And Jalen Ramsey was lined up on the other side. But he also had something in front of him. He had Von Miller and he had Aaron Donald, two first ballot Hall of Famers with a bullet. Not to mention some other guys that were there helping out too, but mainly those two, right? And we know the impact that they can have because Von Miller, I think, had two sacks. Aaron Donald had the game-clinching sack in that game, and he took up a lot of blockers. But Joe Burrow knew he had to get rid of that ball. He wasn't going to sit back there all day unless he moved out a little bit. And they got superior blocking with max protection that he's going to throw the ball down the field. But that's where I go. And the reason why I would go over there is because you know you can't go the other way, right? And I want to stay as far away from Andre Sisco and lobbing that ball in the middle of the field because he's either going to intercept it or somebody's going to get their head knocked off. So what I would do is focus on that area, right? And I'd say it doesn't mean that's the way I would start the game, but it'd be like, I'm going to see what they got. I'm going to see how much sand they got in their pocket, right? But you can work your way up to it. So I'd also come out and I'd see, have they really shored this run up? Have they shored the run up? And wherever Foye Oluwakan is, I go the other way. So that means I'm looking right at Devin Lloyd saying, I'm coming at you. I try to attack Devin Lloyd in the running game. And then I try to attack Devin Lloyd and the rest of everybody else on that side with short crossers are coming across the middle. I want this team to prove to me that they can guard people who are running across their face mask. I want them to prove to me that in year two, they'll be better in year one at chasing those crossing patterns. I want to see in year two, have they figured out who can guard a third receiver? And once I get that stuff going, I'm going to occasionally roll over to this side and do a pump fake action and see what Tyson Campbell's talking about if he's number one on a number one receiver. Now, if you're a team that has Davante Adams or somebody like that, and you line him up and Tyson Campbell's there, you're going to take some shots at him because that's what you do when you have a great player. You try to see if your great player is better than the other team's great player. So I test the run to build up to get to the point. And the point that I would make is who's guarding that other receiver on the other side and who's guarding that slot. That's where I'm going if I'm attacking the Jacksonville Jaguars. And a lot of that has to do with this. The overall weakness, I believe, on their offense, if I'm playing defense, the overall weakness is their inability to do that last year on a consistent basis. And it's imperative that I check and see if those guys can get me off the field on third down. So that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at with that side of the ball. And I already gave it away. I'm going to test the offensive line on the other side, but I'm going to do it in a certain way. But I would come out if I'm on offense and I would absolutely see what y'all got, what you're going to do. I would try to get first down after first down after first down after first down and then test their depth. A lot of the Jaguars' depth is going to be brand new because I think they're going to keep a bunch of these draft picks, and I would try their depth. I would be very, very patient, very patient, get the ball out of my hand quickly, try to get a lot of first downs, and see if you can win the time of possession. Win time of possession, keep Trevor Lawrence off the field, and get first downs, trying to see who's playing nickel, who's playing second corner, and can they stop the run. 4 yards in a cloud of dust. Get them on the field, keep them huffing and puffing, make them rotate guys out, and then when their second group of players comes in, then try to use their inexperience against them. That's what I would do if I were playing against the Jacksonville Jaguars. I'd also occasionally drop back on a 7-step drop to see if their pass rush has improved. Who's coming? Are y'all going to keep dropping them dudes back in coverage? fine. I'll keep dumping it off down in, under the bottom, and I take 4 yards. I think teams that play Jacksonville have to be extremely patient. The only time you don't have to be patient is when you're testing that corner and that slot to see if they've improved. Also, I do some one-on-one things to try to run my running backs out of the backfield on wheel routes to see if Devin Lloyd can run down the field with them. And if they're going to play cover two, I test the way Baltimore did last year or the way Washington did last year to see if they were playing it lazy, the way Shaq Griffin did. Those are the things that I believe are Achilles' heels with the defense, and those are the things that I would try. Now, I'm going to go to the offense. You already know, if you saw the thumbnail and if you heard my slip up a few minutes ago, I'm going to check and see what that offensive line is working with. And I'm going to tell you when and why I do that in just a second here on Locked On Jaguars. All right, segment number three, quick recap. Thank you for making us your first listen, by the way. Quick recap. What are the weaknesses of the team? I explained in the first segment exactly why I think it's important that you identify the things you want to try to avoid, because every team has things that they want to kind of like shy away from, right? I kind of cut my hair a certain way because my face is round and the back of my head is flat, so I elevate the top, right? I get rid of the facial hair for streamlining, and then I grow my hair and I leave weight in the back. And any barber who knows what I'm talking about, I leave weight because it changes my head into a light bulb shape as opposed to being flat, right? So you hide your weaknesses, and that's what I think the Jaguars can do. On offense, if I'm Jacksonville, I'd be scared to death early in the year that some of those teams that we play that are on that schedule are going to test a manhood on the offensive line. They're going to test those trenches. So you'll probably see a heavy dose of the running game. You'll see the ball come out of Trevor's hands really, really quick, especially while Cam Robinson, if he's going to be suspended, and if Ben Bartsch isn't there, then that's going to send that line. You're going to have a rookie, a second-year guy, and then you're going to have a Walker Little, and I don't know who else, on the line to go opposite Brandon Scherff. So I'd make sure that I don't concede that Anton Harrison is going to come in here ready to play. I run some twists. What if they start doing that foolishness? What if they, you know, a kid might be able to play straight up, but has he seen everything? So we're going to throw everything in the kitchen sink at him really, really quick on that offensive line. I would also focus a lot of my pass rushers from the center over to the left guard or left tackle. A lot of action going on over there. If I'm sending somebody, that's where it's coming from. If I'm running a linebacker and I'm running any twist action, that's where I'm doing it. I'm going to make Trevor Lawrence get rid of the ball really, really quick so he can't get those guys, those receivers downfield. That's what I would do. I would also stack the line on run fits, and I'd make sure that they can move me. Can they move me? Because they're not at full strength. If Cam Robinson and Ben Bartsch aren't there, that's two guys out of the top six, right? So they're going to probably be playing some people that they don't want to play early, and it's going to be reflected in their attack. My biggest concern on the team, in fact, early in the year will be the offensive line, because I don't think they're going to be at 100%. I don't think they'll have all of their people. I still think of all the units, that's the one that's I love some of the pieces, and I like their commitment to the offensive line. I just, once again, and I hate to beat a dead horse, I just wish they were building it onto making an addition to what they had last year, sort of the way they're doing with Calvin Ridley. They're adding him to a receiver group. He's just not replacing one of those top two guys, even though he is an upgrade. So it's a little bit different. Last year, Juwan Taylor was their best offensive lineman. He's gone. You got a rookie coming in for him. Hopefully he does a good enough job. Doesn't have to play as well as that kid did, but he might. He might come in and he might be, you know, he might be day one ready. If that's the case, then you have to look at the left guard spot and the left tackle spot. Now, I trust Coach Rauscher, right? I do. I absolutely do. This is not an indictment on him. But you're asking me, I'm not going to think that the running backs can't run. I'm not going to think that the running backs can't pass pro. I'm not going to sit here and try to throw all of these little looks at Trevor, even though they're probably going to do that too, thinking that he can't read it. And I'm not going to sit here and take my chances and guard those wide receivers and tight ends one-on-one, because that ain't going to work out too well for many, for too many people, because too many people don't have guys that can stay with those people. And then Trevor can make throws that everyone else can't make. So that's where you ask me what, if I have one concern, and that's why I said at the beginning that this is for when they play good teams. Even though you have to worry about everyone, my main focus is if they play a really, really good team, because that's what they're going to do if they make the playoffs again, what are the things that I need to be concerned over? That's it. So it's easy to come on here on any podcast and say, well, I'm concerned about depth if they get hurt. So it's about 80% of the league. You could say, I'm concerned what was going to happen if Trevor goes down. This ain't San Francisco. If Trevor goes down, the Jaguars aren't making the playoffs. I'm telling you, if he misses 5, 6, 7, 8 games, I don't think they're going to get home. I really, really don't. The 49ers, their system is a little different. They can probably take my cousin, Andre, and go to the playoffs. You know what I'm saying? Or Antoine, my other cousin. They can probably, my cousin Bud, he's about 5'4", about 130 pounds, but they can probably take him and put him at quarterback. The way it seems like, it doesn't matter who plays quarterback for them, they're at least going to make a good little run in the playoffs, right? Jaguars are built behind having a superior quarterback. That's why Doug came here. That's how they're built. You can't switch that up during the middle of the season. I mean, you might get a game or two. The Cowboys, I think, got a game or two out of a guy last year. You might get a little bit of time where it's not that bad. I'm talking about good teams and playoff runs, okay? Those Jeff Hostetlers of the world and the Frank Reichs of the world from back in the day, that is ancient history. Generally, when a team loses, and don't look at the 49ers as an example, when a team loses the number one guy, that's a problem, okay? So I didn't bring any of that stuff up. What I brought up was special. I brought up offense and defense. Brandon McManus was signed today. They let the poor little kicker go that made the kick. You know, by the way, I got to go back to the Chargers game. That kid almost missed that field goal at the end of the game. That thing from that short distance, it was kind of ugly, and I don't think a lot of people knew it went in at first, right? This is the proactivity that I do like about them. Brandon McManus, veteran kicker in Denver, came up just like that. They pounced on him and claimed him, and then they cut the kicker. Riley Patterson, they sent Riley on his way. Thank you for getting us to the playoffs, but we were nervous every time you kicked the ball last year, and this guy can really, really kick it, so we're going to get him to come in. I like it, though, because now I don't perceive that as a weakness. I was scared going into camp that maybe they still need to find another kicker. I'm not scared now. I like me some Brandon McManus. So I like that they shored that up. I like the fact that with these new additions, Jamal Agnew is probably going to get less carries from scrimmage. Might get a play here or a play there, but he's going to be they're going to focus on him and the kicking game. And I think that is absolutely critical. And I do like the fact that with all the bodies, the guys that they picked up in the draft, most of them are the type of guys that can tackle and block in the kicking game, and I think that's extremely important. So I've mapped it all out. Those are my Achilles heels or my weaknesses, if you want to say that. But remember, last year was wrong, dead wrong. They proved me wrong. And it's not that I was totally off base with my line of thinking, but it's just that they said, hey, ain't no problem, man. We got that. We'll play from behind too. And I just didn't think that they were a team yet built to be able to do that because of the weapons on offense and because I thought they needed to be able to pin their ears back. I didn't say it. They were going to pin their ears back a little bit when it's time to rush the passer as opposed to being in la-la land wondering if a team was running or passing. Don't worry about us because we're going to be here every single day because it's your team every day. We'll be back here tomorrow. We talked about weaknesses today. I'm going to tell you what the strengths of the team are. I'm going to tell you that tomorrow on tomorrow's episode. Tomorrow's a little bit of a special day for me. I will share with you tomorrow why it is so special. And I'm having what I call my own signing day. My own signing day. So I'll explain that to you on tomorrow. But for right now, you guys make sure you take care of each other and tune in tomorrow for another episode and edition of Locked On Jaguars.